Welcome to the HR Power Hour, presented by Career Management Associates. I'm David Chulo. It's about all things in the human resource world. We're going to bring in local, regional, and national guests, and we're going to talk about a variety of topics and explain why human resource management is critical to your business success so that you can make decisions to keep and retain great talent. And you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by Verrill-Law.com and CMAcareer.com. Today, our guest is the one, the only, Mildred Hasbacher. She is the author of Channeling Wisdom. It's a new book. Mildred, tell us about it.
Well, hello, David. First of all, let me say I'm happy to be with you and happy to be with your audience. I hope they listen carefully. Let me tell you about the book. It is called Channeling Wisdom, and the whole focus of the book is on helping mentors in the workplace be better mentors. Now why is that important? Practically every other person that you meet is a mentor of some sort, and that's great. Mentoring is a great activity, and most people enjoy mentoring. They get a feel-good feeling about it, and they should. But over the years, as I've been not only a mentor but a mentee and also a manager responsible in the workplace for actually producing results, I've found that most people are uncertain about whether or not they're doing mentoring right. And even if they are somewhat certain about it, they'd like to improve. So what I've done is just compile everything I've learned, at least the important things I've learned over the last several decades of my work life, regarding mentoring in the workplace, and I'm hopeful that every chapter is going to be useful at some point in the reader's career.
Well, it's a practitioner's guide to effective mentoring in the workplace. I think the key word, at least from when I read through, you know, some of the information that was sent to me in regards to the book, is the word effective. One of the things, if we can punt back for a second, is talk about, you know, a lot of people talk about mentoring, and I'm not 100% sure they truly understand what mentoring really is, especially in comparison to coaching. You have these two words, they have very similar meanings. Could you do the audience a little bit of a discussion about what the difference is and why mentoring in this particular case is why you focused on?
That's a great question, a really great question. Both mentors and mentees and even management have a very flexible, I'll use that word, flexible view and definition of what mentoring really is. The consequence of that is that a mentor might do his best, his or her best, in a given situation with a mentee, but to what end? How does the mentor know that he's done a good job? How does the mentee know that that's what they should expect from a mentor? So mentoring, as distinct from coaching, is a situation in which typically a more senior, certainly a more experienced employee in the workplace, works with a less senior, a junior employee, so that both focus on the objectives of the business. So they're in this together. It's a professional relationship with the objective of achieving a particular business outcome. And the mentor assists the mentee collaboratively in achieving that outcome. Now, it could be that the mentee, maybe even the mentor, needs some coaching. Maybe there are some skills in mentoring, or there are some skills in for a mentee, workplace skills they need to refine or hone or acquire. That's where coaching comes in. So I view coaching as targeted toward individual improvement in a specific area, whereas mentoring is two people in a professional relationship working together to achieve an established business outcome.
You know, one of the things that you just said was really talking about two people being established, you know, two people establishing a business outcome. I have seen, and I'm sure we'll talk more about all these things, but I've seen groups mentoring rather than it just being two individuals. Do you get to that in the book, and do you talk about the difference between one-on-one and then what you might call group mentoring?
Yes. I have a little different term for it. I call it tactical mentoring. Let's say, for example, that a mentor has been pretty successful in working with another employee to achieve a successful project outcome. Let's say they're working on testing a new product for the marketplace. That's their project. So the junior person learns from the senior person, the mentee learns from the mentor, how best to go about doing that. The junior person learns how to plan the work, implement it, identify obstacles, get through those obstacles, and come out with a result. Now, when it comes time for that junior person to present the results to upper management, say in a conference room setting with PowerPoint slides, it could very well be that his mentor doesn't necessarily have the skills to do that effectively, the presentation aspect of it. But there probably is somebody else in the organization who does. Someone who understands what management is looking for in a presentation, typically 2 slides, not 2,000 slides. Typically, okay, what's the bottom line, as opposed to details of how they did everything. So the tactical mentor is the person who can come in at a critical time and make sure that the entire workflow, the entire objective of getting a result and also seeing to it that management understands that result happens successfully.
You know, it's interesting. Mentoring, in general, we see a lot of recently generationally. You know, we always talk about the fact that the one thing an older generation or an older individual has over a younger individual is the one thing they can never have, years of experience doing whatever they're doing. That doesn't mean in any way that the person who is more junior doesn't necessarily have stronger skill sets or more technology background or ways that they can have a win for someone who maybe is in an older generation. We're talking a lot about that because we're seeing a lot of success in mentoring happening between generations. Talk to us a little bit about if you've seen that, how you've seen that work really well, and maybe, in fact, how organizations can use those type of pluses to have a win-win scenario.
That's a great question. I can recall decades ago, very early in my career, I was with a customer, and we were just chatting at a coffee break. And one of the things he told the salesperson from our company was that he was really dreading the thought of the day, which was soon in his mind, that he would have to report to a 25-year-old engineer that they had just hired. In other words, he was a senior guy who thought that having to report to a more junior employee was going to be drastically unpleasant. The reality is that, I'll give you a contrasting example. The reason why I was at that customer was because I was a junior employee who brought in materials expertise to what otherwise was a mechanical engineering-oriented company. They needed to use elastomeric materials, plastics and rubber. No one had that expertise in their organization. So they relied on their vendor, us, me, to come in, understand their situation, understand their needs, and recommend materials that would allow them to achieve the end product that they produced, which was a combination of hardware and software from a material sense. I did that for many years. My territory was actually North America, so I got to experience this time and again. And I have to say that probably nowhere was I more welcome than where I had to work with very senior mechanical engineers who really needed to understand the materials that we sold them. There are sometimes that I thought that I could walk into their place with a bird on my head, a live bird on my head, and it wouldn't matter because they were just happy to see me so that I could help them through their materials problem. So whether it's an older or younger generation, it's really the expertise that that person brings to bear on it. And that's why I said earlier that typically, at least up till this point, mentors have been more senior. But I have to say it would be more senior with respect to the expertise that's required, not necessarily the years in the job.
And so we're talking about mentoring and how it focuses on what I would call a very important element, which is the culture of an organization. You know, culture is that fit, that feel, and sometimes, as I like to say, it's that squishy stuff that sometimes is really hard to define, but you know it when you feel it. Have you seen success in terms of using mentoring to develop change or maybe ensure that a culture stays consistent?
Mentoring can help enormously there. It's key for mentors to realize, especially with new hires, whether they're at the entry level or even more senior hires who come in at a more executive level, that your environment, the mentor's environment, is brand new to them. Maybe they're experts in their field, they probably are, or maybe they're very promising in their fields, they probably are, but they just don't know what the rules are in your workplace. And oftentimes, there are many unwritten rules. People just take for granted certain things. Simple examples. Is management approachable for suggestions? If they aren't, you ought to know that. If they are, how do you do it? Do you set up appointments ahead of time? Is a hallway intercept okay? We talked about presentations a moment ago. What kind of presentations is management expecting? Detailed or high level? What kind of support is required? What are the objectives of management? Oftentimes people come in with great ideas, which is fine, but they don't yet know what the baked-in plans are in the 1, 2, 3, and 5-year plans. It's probably best to find those things out. In short, incoming people don't know what they don't know. And what they don't know is what can really be deadly in terms of succeeding early on in the career and progression thereafter. So if mentors have their antennae open, they'll be looking for ways in which the newcomer is simply unaware of these unwritten rules, some of which are very important, and be there for them to tip them off ahead of time and in this case, coach them through it.
You know, it's interesting in your introduction to your book, again, Channeling Wisdom is the book. One of the things you talk about is the fact that among the recent headlines that we constantly hear is the fact that employers are challenged by the skills gap. America's economic growth is challenged by the skills gap. State governments worries about the skills gap. I'm guessing that the word skills gap is the key. But the reality is that this is definitely a challenge that is facing across the country. And you talk in the introduction a little about the fact that mentoring can be a way which can upskill employees faster. Talk to us a little bit about that.
That's another great question, David. I mentioned a bit earlier that new employees, whether they're junior level or senior people coming in, don't know what they don't know with respect to the culture in an organization. They also don't know what the company is all about. They may have done some searching, some talking to people who work there, but until you are in the workplace and experiencing it, you can never really be sure that you've got a good grip on what the company is doing and particularly where it's going and how you fit in. A mentor, almost by definition, has been at that company for a while. He's got the inside scoop, the inside ball game, so to speak, on those issues. He or she will probably be the best one to spot where you can fit in and what you need to do to improve your chances of fitting in and growing. Notice I use the word growing. It's actually been acknowledged that the idea of a career ladder might not be relevant anymore. The new relevant thought is a career freeway where you have frequent off-ramps to get off, learn some new things that apply to your job, get back on, and grow in your job. And a mentor, having done that before you, is likely to be the single best person to help you do that.
And that makes a lot of sense. And one of the things that I would say is that as we go into this next segment, I want to really dive a little deeper into exactly how this freeway works today and how HR professionals and companies might be able to really make sure that they set up programs to make it efficient. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM. We will be right back.
If you're responsible for hiring and firing, you know it can be like a roulette wheel. If your new hire turns out to be a bad hire, well, all you've lost is time and money. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Don't gamble with your hiring. We have a better solution. We've helped hundreds of companies like yours find the right talent, and we guarantee it. Career Management Associates delivers people that fit. Go to cmacareer.com.
It's 3 p.m., and you just ran out of ink. You have a report due end of day, which is 2 hours from now. You can't push the deadline because end of day means end of today, not end of tomorrow day. What now? Go to your local Staples store. Staples now has an even bigger selection of HP ink and toner. In store, in stock, and at low prices every day. So you can get your ink fast for less. End of story.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobs in ME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobs in ME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At 154 years old, Verrill Dana has an illustrious history and more than seven generations of legal expertise. With more than 130 attorneys across seven offices from Maine to Washington, D.C., Verrill Dana serves clients across the country and around the world. HR professionals, business leaders, and in-house counsel count on Verrill Dana, one of the premier labor and employment law practices in the Northeast. Contact them today at verrilldana.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by verrill-law.com and cmacareer.com. I'll tell you, Mildred, as we talk today about your new book, and I got to tell you, it's one of those things in which, you know, people really need to talk about, Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. You mentioned in the last segment about this new freeway, this new career freeway versus, if you want to call it career ladder, I think everybody's heard of career laddering. You know, companies have worked a lot to even get ladders in place. Now we're starting to tell them, hey, that's not exactly how we want to set it up. We want it to be a freeway. Talk to me a little bit about how companies can easily, effectively, and efficiently change that direction without costing too much to them or costing too much in terms of time and energy.
I think the first step is to sit back and recognize that the career ladder may be causing more employee problems than it solves. In the old days, and it wasn't that long ago, these old days, an employee was looking forward to getting raises, getting increased responsibility, perhaps in terms of the number of people he manages, or for the scope of the budget or work that he controls. Essentially, that's the way a pyramid works. And we all know there isn't much room at the top for a whole lot of people. So invariably, employees would at least feel they were getting stuck at the lower rung or the lower rungs of the ladder. And frankly, management really had boxed themselves into the same rigid framework. And there really wasn't much that could happen during annual performance reviews to give a given employee much information or even guidance as to how they might move up the next rung. Sometimes they were told, well, it requires an opportunity to be there, the timing has to be right, and you have to have somebody to sponsor you, and you have to be right for the position. It's rare that all of those four things happen at once, and I think the employees felt that way. but the freeway approach is much freer. I cite several examples in my book of experiences I personally had, both as a mentee and mentor, with this freeway approach. One of them was when a company that I joined after it made an acquisition of another company. I joined in a managerial position. As is so often the case in those situations, the employees at the acquired company felt and maybe were realistic in feeling that they were no longer top dog, even if they had good positions in that acquired company. However, there's always opportunities in situations like that. I, for one, was looking for someone who would be a field sales engineer. I mentioned to you that that was my own position at one time before then, and I recognized how powerful a technically trained person in the field could be to supplement, complement the salespeople out there and truly exercise, practice consultative sales selling along with the salesman. That was a relatively novel idea. It had worked in prior environments. I introduced it there, but the question was, who could I get to do that job? Well, it turns out that a fellow who had been in manufacturing on the production line for years looked like he was a good bet for it. He had the product knowledge. He had the technical skills. He certainly knew how the product was made. Yet he was languishing. There was nowhere for him to go in the manufacturing organization. And he was not a sales type. But here was a freeway, a novel, new off-ramp that we were going to test out, a combination of product knowledge and good customer skills. He certainly had good interpersonal skills, and that was kind of a must in terms of soft skills for this job. It was a brand new job for him. We offered it to him. There was no pay raise, no grade increase. It was just a new opportunity, and he took it. He did phenomenally well. It got to the point where salesmen wanted him to come out with them because they experienced his product knowledge as helping them differentiate our product from competition. Of course, as sales improved, he got bonuses. So although he didn't get a base pay raise taking that job, he made more money because he was so good at it. And I've seen that kind of thing happen time and again. I think it's a terrific idea. And as long as management is open to getting out of that pyramid box, out of the rigid ladder, they can be creative in terms of giving creating opportunities and giving opportunities to people otherwise might not have.
We talked in the first segment a little bit about the difference between coaching and mentoring. You define in your book, again, the book is Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. The definition you define is a mentor is one who intentionally shares knowledge, experiences, and wisdom with others for the purpose of producing desired and beneficial results. And it's interesting, you break down the words in your book, talk about intentionally, knowledge, and experience, and wisdom, and purpose, and producing and beneficial results. Why did you use those words and take the time to really dig deep into understanding that definitions? Because it makes so much sense when you do that. I'm just trying to figure out how you came up with that insight.
What really prompted me to think about mentoring in the workplace is the fact that so many of my colleagues, so many younger people that I connected with on alumni sites, on professional sites, in social media, and in professional and trade meetings, never had a concrete idea of what a mentor is. That was their basic number one problem. What's a mentor? How do I find one? How do I know when I have found one? What should I look for? What can I expect from a mentor? Are there any topics that are off limits in our discussion? How do we go about interacting? What's our professional relationship going to look like? And I thought, my goodness, I think I have something to say about that, having experienced decades, literally, I won't tell you how many, but decades of being a mentee and a mentor both. And I had, without realizing it, come to a working definition of mentoring. as you do this, you learn, okay, what are the boundaries? What should I be focused on as a mentor in a workplace? Well, first and foremost, I'm there to help the company achieve its objectives. Okay, that's good. That'll help me decide what I do and what I don't do. I'm also there to help the other person, the mentee, achieve the company's objectives, which is both achieving the financial goals of the company and strategic goals of the company, but it's also there to develop talent. Talent development has become a big, big objective in the last few years, and that's an objective of every company, whether they explicitly say so or not. So, all right, there again, that helps me decide as a mentor, what do I do and how do I do it? Then you put all those pieces into practice in real life situations within the workplace. A project gets stalled, what do you do? A mentee thinks they want to work someplace else. How do you work through that? So I decided that by defining workplace mentoring specifically, it would really be a roadmap, a blueprint, a guide, in principle, with principles, to the everyday practice of mentoring in the workplace.
You know, one of the things that I liked about your book, and again, I think it's important to say that we're talking with Mildred Hasbacher. She is the author of Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. I'm your host, David Chulo. This is the HR Power Hour. Mildred, in your book, you give examples. You give, in some ways, some homework for people to do. And you talk about, and I'll read a segment here, a more contemporary portrayal of mentoring can be found in the Star Wars movie series. Here, too, the mentors share knowledge and wisdom with less experienced companions. Although Athena, as source of wisdom, empowerment, and effectiveness, is replaced by the living but immortal Force. The list of mentor characters in the multi-film saga is long, and then you go through some of them. It's an interesting example of mentoring, and when you put it in that context, you absolutely can see it. Tell me how you came up with that, because that's a really good analogy.
When I decided to capture my thoughts on mentoring, I wanted to find out, all right, who else has tackled this issue? And I looked all around and found, to my delightful surprise, that some classics professors, notably one at Harvard, but there are others, had studied the Odyssey as the original Athena mentor character. There was a character analysis of Athena, and the Athena character popped up again in the Star Wars trilogy in particular. So I thought, all right, this is good. I certainly was a fan of that first released Star Wars movie. I don't know if you were, but I thought
absolutely.
I thought it was the best good versus evil story that had ever been written because there was something in it for everyone. I took my nephews to it at the time. I had not seen it before. It was my first time and their first time, and I was surprised at what they saw in that movie. Everyone who saw it was able to draw something useful, was able to draw some wisdom from it, even my young nephews. It was terrific. So I thought, all right, if that's the case, chances are a movie picture, is worth 25,000 words that I can write. So let me mention it, because it might be an easy way for people to pick up that concept by looking for it, deliberately looking for it in the characters that I listed in the book.
Well, you know, one of the things that is, I guess, interesting about that is the fact that it's such a simple analogy, right? And that anybody that can look at that sees and understands their, if you want to say, or relates to their role, right, in the movie. And
yes.
And I remember the same thing. I remember saying, you know, hey, I relate to whoever it was. And not just because I was a young boy at the time and, you know, just excited about the film as it was, you do have this very evil and good scenario that you could easily understand. And, you know, there is a lot of that thought process sometimes at work, is there not? That this is just good and bad. And while that's a very simplification of the workplace, that's how some people do think, isn't it?
Well, they do. They do. In fact, just today, I'm not quite sure where I picked it up, but somebody made a comment about the best friends you're ever going to have are the ones you make at the workplace because you've all been through the same war together. You know, and there is something about, you know, being World War II buddies or workplace buddies that you've gone through the same war together and you can relate. Yeah, you can complete each other's sentences.
No, there's no question about that. Well, we're talking with Mildred Hasbacher. She is the author of the book Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM, and we will be right back.
Running a company can feel like you're surrounded. A key person quits. A big project presents itself. You need good people fast. Hello, I'm David Chulo of Career Management Associates. Our contract staffing service will fill a position or find the right talent for a short-term project. Hundreds of companies choose us because we deliver people that fit. Career Management Associates, your contract staffing solution. Go to cmacareer.com.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. Jobsinme.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on Jobsinme to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit jobsinme.com. That's jobsinme.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
Best paints for the job site are at the Home Depot, specifically new Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer. It starts at only $23.98 a gallon. It's specially formulated to spray easier and cover walls faster, a lot faster. So you're done and on to the next job faster. Better paint means better jobs. New Glidden Diamond Paint and Primer starting at just $23.98 a gallon. You'll only find it in one place, the Home Depot. More saving, more doing. U.S. only.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at jacksonlewis.com. That's jacksonlewis.com.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, we're talking with Mildred Hasbacher. She is the author of Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. I'm your host, David Chulo, and we are having a great conversation about mentoring, aren't we, Mildred?
Absolutely. I thank you for the good questions that are prompting me to answer.
Oh, that's good. I'm happy to do so. Well, you know, I think I want to pause for just a second because, you know, people are out there listening. They're going, well, this is very interesting, but who is Mildred Hasbacher? And yes, I heard her bio at the beginning of the show, but I don't really know much about her. So, Mildred, why don't you give us kind of a little bit about yourself? Tell us, you know, what got you into mentoring? How did this all come about? Let's take a few minutes and give some nice backstory here.
Sure. Well, in terms of my background, I do have a technical degree, advanced technical degree, and an advanced business degree. Started out working in industry and loved it. I just loved the bench, as they say. I was an R&D person. And from there, I migrated to interfacing with customers. And from interfacing with customers and learning the businesses, I became business manager. So I had that progression. And along the way, I was helped a lot by people who were mentors to me. And I give some examples in the book primarily to illustrate what it takes to be a good mentor and how you can be a good and effective mentor. There are very specific examples, and I think most people can relate to them who've been in the workplace. Of course, as you advance, I had a group of sales engineers ultimately report to me, and managing and mentoring them was so important for us to be able to get the work done in a collegial fashion, have everybody feel like they wanted to come to work every day, and also fulfill what management expected of us. So I kept doing that as I advanced into different companies and different types of work. I was involved in the manufacturing operation for years in the industrial products area, then in the chemical process industry. Then I joined a global consulting firm where I had a lot of diverse experiences, both in terms of the subject matter and customers and clients. And that was a terrific experience because of the variety. And it helped me validate what I had concluded about being a good mentor over a number of different scenarios.
You know, in the book, you talk a little bit about feedback. You talk about feedback as always being touted as a tool for getting better at your job performance and helping the company get better as well. What are some of the best practices with regard to communicating feedback effectively? And is there a right way to do it versus a wrong way to give feedback? And can mentors help with that?
Mentors can certainly help with that. And there certainly is a wrong way to give feedback. I'll give you one very simple example that happened to me. I had prepared a report. I no longer remember what the report was about, but it, generally speaking, it was some sort of status with introducing a new product nationally. So I prepared the report, gave it to my boss, who a day or so later came back and said, well, this isn't good enough. Put it on my desk and left. So I thought, well, that's terrific. I thought it was okay.
I'm sure no one on the audience can relate to a boss coming in and doing that. I'm sure no one can relate to that. I'm just chuckling to myself. I've had bosses just like that. It continues.
Of course. Well, okay, that was his opinion, and I'm not going to dispute that. But I went back to see him then a day later and said, well, I'm assuming that you would want me to improve on this. But I'm having trouble thinking about how I should do it because I intended it to be a good report. I didn't deliberately introduce any errors or omissions. Well, he didn't have an answer for it. He didn't know how to tell me how to make it better. I think we left it there. This was absolutely a dead end as far as I was concerned. I didn't know how to interpret that. And it was just one of those things that you just move on. Both he moved on from it and I moved on. But that is a really bad way to do it. It's just not bad because it's not effective. If the report's useful, important, critical, and someone presents it to you, then all right. It's really up to the manager or mentor. If a mentor is in place with an employee, the employee can go to the mentor and improve on that report one-on-one before it gets turned in officially. But it's really important to, every time you interact with a mentee, to know that you can improve what that mentee is doing or not. If you can't as a mentor, you may actually want to go out and find somebody else in the organization who can. I think I cited an example earlier where you may be an excellent mentor in terms of project management and timelines and deadlines, but when it comes to reporting to upper management the results of a project, that's a different skill entirely. And you may want to, as a mentor, find someone that you know that's done this successfully. Successfully meaning management has liked that report and has continued to fund the activity or promote the person. So it's your job as mentor with your mentee to either you yourself or through others that you identify and tap to help that mentee improve. On the mentee side, it's important to not it's important, I think, to cultivate a craving for criticism. Now, that might sound horrendous, but if you cultivate the craving to know what you can do better, that's really what this is all about, knowing what you can do better, then you're going to actively seek that, as I tried to do with the example I gave you, but apparently my boss, for whatever reason, wasn't able to do it. But if you want to improve, then you won't be defensive. You won't try to justify what you're already doing. You're going to say, okay, how do I make this better? That's all I want to know. How do I make this better? How do I do this better? How can I be sure of a better outcome? If a mentee asks those questions and you've got a good mentor, that's golden. That's a great relationship, and a productive one and an effective one.
And isn't that the ultimate goal at the end of the day? I mean, reality is mentoring isn't supposed to be work. It's supposed to be the feeling of helping others and providing that wisdom. And, you know, one of the challenges sometimes is that process, people overthink it, don't they? And they think there's this massive process to it. But sometimes it's just the chemistry between two people where they can share and be open and trusting that really has the most value.
You're right. You're right. No need to overthink it. I think the idea is to decide going in that you're going to use that mentoring definition that I captured in the book and say that as a mentor, you and your mentee are in this together for the benefit of your organization. If you need to remind yourself of that silently every time you have an interaction, that's okay. That's good. It's just making sure that you're checking yourself to be sure that you're doing what you want to do anyway.
That's absolutely correct.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
So what is one of the biggest challenges that mentors face? And how do they overcome it?
I think from what I have seen, just the practical issue is a mentor is uncertain as to whether they're doing the job right. In fact, somebody from an angel network, you probably know what an angel network is, and your listeners may very well know that.
Absolutely.
Too. Yeah. Somebody from an angel network, when he found out that I had written this book, said to me, you know, mentoring's important, but I can't find ways to improve my mentoring. And this is an angel person who's probably been involved in business for quite some time, and he's still looking for ways to improve. So I'm hopeful that the examples and the advice and the experiences that I've captured in this book will help mentors improve and understand what their role is and how they can help.
You know, I got to tell you, it's a great conversation about the importance of mentoring, the value of mentoring, the simplicity of mentoring, and the results that can be had by it. So, Mildred, you've done a really good job of explaining that to us today. And, of course, we're going to come right back for the last segment of the show. We're excited about it. We're going to talk about a couple things that the audience absolutely should wait around for. You're listening to the HR Power Hour on News Talk, WLOB 100.5 FM. And we will be right back.
Are you looking to hire? Stop wasting time. JobsandME.com has been matching main employers to job seekers since 1999. Job postings start at only $159 with their Quick Post product. Your employment ad can be distributed to over 75 job boards for maximum exposure. When it comes to recruiting locally, you can count on JobsandME to connect you with qualified candidates in this area. Visit JobsandME.com. That's JobsandME.com today. Stop searching and start hiring locally.
At highway speeds, the average text takes your eyes off the road for about 5 seconds. That's enough time to travel the length of a football field. Stop texts, stoprex.org. Brought to you by the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Founded in 1958, Jackson Lewis is a national law firm with a local presence. The firm's 765 attorneys practicing in 54 locations throughout the U.S. and Puerto Rico provide a wide range of resources to address every aspect of the employer-employee relationship. HR professionals, business and in-house counsels, and C-suite professionals count on Jackson Lewis as it has one of the most active employee litigation practices in the United States. Contact them today at JacksonLewis.com. That's JacksonLewis.com.
Today's economic environment presents many challenges. It seems as though it's harder than ever to navigate the investment landscape to seek out adequate return and manage risk at the same time. ClearPoint Financial is a financial advocate for those who need assistance making complex decisions about how to manage their wealth. They inspire their clients to make informed decisions through education, communication, and service that exceeds expectation. Call Michael Toole at ClearPoint Financial, the official financial advisor of the Maine Black Bears.
Guys, when you buy your clothes at DXL, you look good. But you feel like a rock star. So if you want to look and feel like a... You'll find all the brands you love, waist size 38 and up, all in one awesome store. DXL, you're looking good. Right now, Harbor Bay long sleeve tees are just $29.99 each when you buy two or more.
And we're back, and you're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and Verrill-Law.com. Today, we're talking with Mildred Hasbacher. She is the author of the book, Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. You know, Mildred, I got to tell you, I've had a wonderful conversation about this today, because mentoring is near and dear to me. As you know, I do executive coaching as part of the gig here at CMA. And we talk about mentoring a lot, right, with our HR clients and also with our coaching clients. So I absolutely understand the value of what mentoring brings to it. One of the stories I thought in the book that is really, I think, appropriate as we head towards spring here at the end of February, that you cite two past Red Sox players, Mo Vaughn and Ted Williams, when exploring the question of when and how to, quote-unquote, move on, that is, recognize one phase of your career is over and the next stage must be identified and pursued. Tell us more about how Mo handled this and what Ted had to say about it.
David, I'm going to assume that your listeners are familiar with both men. Ted Williams, who was to baseball and the Red Sox, what Tom Brady is today to the Patriots. And Bo Vaughn, a generation later, who, like Ted, was considered the best hitter. I chose this story for my chapter called Moving On, in which I cite some examples of how mentors can handle a situation in which their mentee has expressed some interest in moving on outside the organization or maybe even inside it. Mo Vaughn came to a point, as so many sports folks do, that he felt that he hadn't been treated fairly or with respect, both in terms of his salary and just in terms of how management, the Red Sox management, handled him. So he was open in a way he hadn't been prior to that to new offers. He became a free agent, and the Los Angeles Angels decided to take advantage of that opportunity. Now, Ted Williams, although long since retired as a player, always kept up with what was going on, and of course was a popular interviewee in radio sports programs. And driving to work one morning, I overheard him say, in response to a question posed by the show host, that Mo Vaughn will never hit anywhere else better than he does at Fenway Park. And that he was so certain, Ted was, about that it caught my attention. And the show host pursued that angle a little bit. And Ted Williams said, you know, Mo says there's something going on in the front office at the club. Well, there's always something going on at the front office. Almost as if to say, look, set that aside, Mo. Mo, you're a great hitter, the greatest right now. If you want to keep hitting well, you will not leave Fenway Park. Now, to Ted, his goal had always been to be the greatest hitter, and that's really all he ever wanted. He could focus on that exclusively and put aside all distractions. Mo decided to go with the Angels because of the salary they offered and because of the respect they showed him. It was actually a letter-writing campaign that they staged to persuade Mo that they really wanted him. So Mo left. But if you look at his hitting record after that, he was never as good as he was when he was at Fenway Park. So Ted, his hitting mentor, was right. Ted understood what it took to hit well and where you could hit well. And he knew exactly where the best place was for Mo. But Mo decided to move on. One of the lessons here is for any person who decides to move on or is thinking about it, a mentee, understand what your trade-offs really are going to be. You may want the money. You may want the respect in other ways. But know that it just might not be the same as what you have now. If you're ready to make that trade-off, okay. But I, as mentor to you, want to be sure that you recognize there's always trade-offs and think about those before you decide.
What a great way to end the show today, Mildred. I think you did a wonderful job today of providing a really detailed understanding of your new book, Channeling Wisdom, A Practitioner's Guide to Effective Mentoring in the Workplace. I want to thank you for being on the HR Power Hour. And where can we get the book?
It's available on Amazon. In the search field, any search field, Channeling Wisdom, Amazon, and it'll bring you right to it.
That's a wonderful thing to do. So go to Amazon also, even better. Go to the HRPowerHour.com right after the show. You can see Mildred's face. You can see a picture of the book. You can click on the book. It will take you right to the site. If you learn a little bit more, and heck, listen to the show again if you're so inclined, and or share it with someone out there so they can hear it as well. Mildred, thank you so much for being on the show today.
Thank you, David, for having me.
You're listening to the HR Power Hour, presented by CMAcareer.com and on WLOB 100.5 FM. And now, your HR Tip of the Week. Your HR Tip of the Week is being sponsored by Verrill.
This is Liz Johnston from Verrill. When is the last time you reviewed your non-exempt and exempt worker classifications? If not for a while, it may be a good time to do an audit. The Department of Labor recently increased the salary threshold for exempt workers, and so some previously qualifying employees may no longer earn enough to qualify. Some states even impose higher salary thresholds for exempt status, so it's also important to check laws in your local jurisdiction. Furthermore, as your organization grows and employees' roles develop, consider whether the employee is actually performing duties that meet the duties tests for exempt status. Job titles and what's stated in job descriptions are not enough. What matters is the work that the employee is actually performing on a day-to-day basis. If you have questions about performing an audit or on whether an employee is appropriately classified, contact a member of Verrill's employment and labor team.
And that's your HR Tip of the Week, sponsored by Verrill. Thank you, everyone, for listening, and catch us every week at 10 a.m. on News Talk WLOB 100.5 FM or 1310 a.m. and streaming live at WLOBradio.com. Podcasts of this show and every show are available at HRPowerHour.com. Have a great week, everyone, and remember, HR management is critical to your business's success.